not worth the hype. What hype? The hype not I give one, you
know. Yeah, nobody hype it. Nobody hype it.
Why? I don't wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to make you a bad cup of coffee. Yeah. I want to ruin your day. It's a little bit unfair to struggling businesses to be so quickly to critique. Yeah. You don't like it. Doesn't mean he doesn't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I never force you to come here. I have my store. I wait here. You choose to come and join my queue, right?
Oh my God, I also feel that about...
I'll pay sometimes.
Because people sound like, they're very preachy or they keep saying things I disagree. Then nobody asks you to see what.
There are plenty other comics and other podcasts you can listen to.
Yeah, go see all these things. I think people need to understand like how free market works.
Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of the Woke Salaryman podcast. Today's guest is quite special because it's the first time we're doing an outside podcasting. I'm actually damn nervous technically. First time. I'm so nervous, I scared this one don't record, that one don't record, whatever, you know. So, maybe I introduce a bit about Faye first, right? I think Faye, she is a young hawker.
Young-ish.
Young local hawker. She's Singaporean, and she runs together with two of her other siblings, Coffee Break, which has a branch now here in Amoy. And where are the other two branches?
Hong Lim Food Centre and Market Street Food Centre.
I think it's very interesting because you don't often see local Singaporeans who are young run hawker stores or choose to run a hawker store. Maybe I'm wrong there, you know, so feel free to correct that sentence.
Yeah,
so
you're wrong.
I'm wrong, ah. Okay, maybe you... Okay, let's just get into it. Like, what is the reality? Like, how common is it that young Singaporeans do this?
I think maybe because I'm young-ish. So I actually get to know a lot of fellow young hawkers who either mostly actually 70% start out as fresh brand new hawkers. This is like the first time they are ever doing
right.
it. Then there are also some who take over, but very rare few who take over from their parents or grandparents. Mm.
And in this case, just to introduce to audiences who don't know, this is a family business.
This is a family run business. So my siblings and I, we are third generation. Mm. And then before that, my father, second generation. Then of course, his father, my grandfather, first generation. And
right.
from China lah, Hainan Island.
Yes, yes, of course.
You also don't speak, right?
No, I don't speak.
I also don't speak. I only know how to scold people.
It's so niche, right?
Yeah, it's very niche. That's how this business was passed down to us. Mm.
So before this, what did you do? Like, what do you study? And like, what do you do something before this?
Yes, I was a full-time athlete. At the same time, I was working for the Volleyball Association of Singapore. So I used to play beach volleyball for Singapore.
Wow, Team Singapore lah.
Team Singapore.
Top level lah.
No one better than me, my partner
Singapore.
And I. Then lah, yeah.
Right.
So, then of course I was doing sports events and marketing for the association then. Mm. So those were the times that I was fresh out of university.
Right.
Then after that, I actually was a full-time barista for about 2 years before I finally settled down here.
And what did you study before that?
My degree is in business management with a major in marketing.
Marketing. And was that done to help the business?
Yes, that course was chosen specifically to help the business.
You choose or the family choose?
No, I choose.
You choose lah.
I choose. Before that, I thought I wanted to do mass comm.
Mm. Yes. We both mass comm one.
My brother was from mass comm MP.
Oh my God, also mass comm MP
also.
Maybe you no, I think you are younger.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Oh yeah. So I thought that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to follow him because quite outspoken.
Yes.
And all that. So then because my A levels was not great. Mm. So I took 1 year off and I did a part time diploma at night. And I thought I would really like mass comm. So then I realized I actually hated it.
Ah, why?
Yes. Maybe I wasn't as good at it as I thought I would be.
Right.
But during the night, I would study. In the day, I'll come here to work to supplement, you know, my pocket money.
Mm.
And that was when I decided, can pay bills.
I see.
Can maybe start a family. My dad put us through university with my mom lah. She's a civil servant.
Yeah.
So why not, you know?
I see. So your mom doesn't do the business, lah?
No, she's not a fan.
Oh.
She's a civil servant.
She's not a fan of the work, lah.
She's
like
not
stand.
A fan of the stand long hours.
Yeah, it's actually quite brutal.
Meager, then, right. And all her kids went through university, ma. Right. So she was like, huh?
Oh, because when you say like, because you say like you chose the marketing degree to help this.
Yes.
I was thinking, what, is it like 6 years old? They like. Your mission in life is now.
No lah.
No, right? It's like no afterwards, like, hey, maybe pa, I want to do this. Like,
yeah, it was really just maybe after that is a possible career law. Not career, like possible profession to.
Yes.
Like everybody else law. I want to be a doctor, I want to be a banker, I want to be in the office. I'll just work and be able to supplement my life law.
Mm.
Yeah, that was just, at the start, it was just that.
So in the theme of like, you know, family businesses, what was that like growing up? Was there any talk of this? How was it discussed in the family? Because your brother did this first, right?
Yes.
Your brother was the first to actually take over.
Yes. No leh, we... In the family, at least at home, we never like... My dad was never like...
Pressure lah.
Yeah. There was no talk of when my dad would actually ever retire.
Then what would happen then? Like the store would just close,
it would have just...
It?
Yeah, it would have closed down, been lost. Oh. We would have been... in cushy office jobs, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. But then, for your brother, because he was the first, when was the first inkling that he had? Because he studied mass comm, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so.
And political science in SMU.
And political science.
After that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did he, do you know like how he even want to do this?
He actually applied to be a teacher with NIE. Mm-hmm. And I think in the first 3 months, you're supposed to serve with a school.
Mm.
And I think that was when he kind of decided he had it because I think the kids were a terror. Besides that, he wanted to do something where he could make an impact directly,
right?
So running his own business was the most obvious choice.
Teaching confirmed no hair because you're entrenched in so much hierarchy,
correct?
Right?
Like correct, it's the hierarchy,
it's a
and
machine.
The red tape that he just
at least as a public sector teacher,
correct,
you have to wait
exactly.
A couple of years, then you go out, then you be your own private tutor.
And then you can build your own model.
Yeah,
right.
But then that will take a while also.
Yeah. And not everybody would become private tutor.
That's right.
And I think he just didn't see a future in it.
I see.
And I think he just wanted to decide and then see it happen.
Right.
So that was when he decided.
Oh.
So for yourself, you've been helping out in the store since you were 13 years old.
Yes.
And then after you graduated, you thought you could do it full time.
Yes.
But then was your brother already doing it full time or?
No. He joined maybe half a year earlier only.
But previously, was your dad doing this alone? Or were there like, did he hire people? Or is this you all doing also?
He only ever had my aunt as his part-time
assistant.
And you know like, I don't think they got along very well either.
Yeah, I imagine.
My dad is a terror. His temper is...
Is he very particular about the coffee?
He is.
Because it's like his craft, is
yes,
it?
Yes,
right?
He's very particular about how it's made and then how you serve it.
Right.
And then he prided service over the product quality.
Service. So regular customer then probably is a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
The relationship that you have to build and maintain, right?
Yes. That was something that we took a while to master, actually. Because
master?
I think when we first took over... A lot of people, if they don't see my dad, they wouldn't come.
Or you see them linger there. Oh,
yeah,
he's not here.
Exactly that kind of body language.
Like they mentioned in video, I think in the beginning, like one of the customers say like the coffee they did not like.
Yeah.
But then because of the dad, they stayed on to trust in the process.
Yeah.
So when your brother first, then you, then your sister, when y'all came on, was there like a trial? But he tastes and like, oh, it's not quite there. You cannot earn the right to take over here. Like, what's the overlapping process like? Because he's not here now, right?
You cannot earn the right to make coffee, but you can still handle cashiering or making toast.
Oh, I see.
So what's the value chain? So the most...
You think Kung Fu...
The most not capable person at that time, so they'll do cashiering first.
Yeah,
then you move up.
You start as a cashier, then you move up to do toast. Then, of course, eventually you'll learn to brew the coffee, which is like making the big batches.
Mm.
Then you will be what we say, tao chiu la, or in Ang Mo terms, head barista.
Mm.
So, which is the person really making your kopi si, siu tai.
The final mix.
Yes, the final
the head chef that puts it all together.
Correct, correct.
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
The one who decides this is good to go.
So at what stage would he keep? Like, don't let y'all pass until y'all can get the flavor, right?
In the beginning, we were all only allowed to just observe. Oh. And by the time we observed, we were actually supposed to know how to make when we were told to make it.
Right.
Like, 你先看我做,你看了,你会了, then 你就自然而然会泡了.
Oh, so it's like, it's not a science, it's more of an art, is it?
Yes, it's more art than it is.
It's like alchemy,
science.
Not chemistry. Like, it's, go by feel, one, is it?
It starts off as chemistry. I can tell you, a kopi C siu dai is how much milk, how much sugar, how much coffee, how much water.
Mm. Yeah.
But the art is in knowing your kopi C siu dai and his kopi C siu dai is how.
So oh, this wow. is regular customers?
Based on regular Correct. Customers. Wow,
yes.
okay.
Based serious? On an understanding of, say, even tourists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like...
oh, so
yeah,
you
expats.
Profile. You see, yes. okay, this kind probably like it sweeter.
Yeah.
Bam.
Correct,
it's
correct.
Like CRM, customer relationship
it
management.
It is wow. very much. And yeah. which is the reason why when my dad wasn't around, a lot of customers were like, I don't think
yes.
they know how to make my kopi C yeah.
So they don't get to know me and my
correct.
Taste.
Correct, correct.
And how long did like the whole like process take for the handover?
I think we took about one to two years before wow. we were like, okay, we got this. We have our own steady stream of regulars. Mm.
You all say one or he say one? He also signed off lah.
No lah, he like, y'all can do it lah. Because after a while, he know what we are capable of.
Right, right,
then
right.
he, of course, he always come down and test our coffee lah. You yeah. know, sometimes like, give away a coffee, and then you make sure you make
then
it.
Then do y'all like, VIP order, this one don't get wrong.
I
know?
Think for now, we still do. Even my staff, when they come, when my dad comes down, they,
got trepidation
lah. Uncle the kopi.
Oh, right. Uncle the kopi lah.
Uncle the kopi, yeah.
So in your head, like, how many people do you remember? Like, what's your hard dislike in your head of the kind of? Is it like in the hundreds one?
I think
you see face then you know.
More than
100.
It's quite easy after once
is
you.
Is it really? It's like muscle memory. It's yeah, just in there.
Yeah. Like if you come first day, second day, the third day, I remember your order already.
Really?
Yeah. Because if you come at a regular time.
Right.
And it's not so much because I'm so good at what I do, but it's.
It's a part of your day.
I enjoy it and it's something that comes very natural. So it's not a chore.
I see.
More of an enjoyment that, oh yes, I remember your order on the
right.
third day. And it makes me very happy. It makes the customer very happy.
Right. So, wow, that's amazing. I cannot imagine knowing the specifications to that kind of detail, you know.
I'm sure you're good at your chore.
But they'll tell you lah, right? They'll say, today's one a bit too sweet.
Okay, yes,
then you
really?
Correct.
So actually when I drink kopi,
yeah, I just
you don't dare.
I'm the sort who just accept it. You know, I mean, you give me like, oh, okay. I guess this is the kopi that.
Yeah,
I'm
I know. I'm the same. I'm so like scared of this kind of thing, right? There's I go Toastbox and then they remember me or they know my order, but I'm afraid to acknowledge it even.
Why?
I don't even go. Wow, 你记得我的order? 谢谢你. I just shy lah. But they know lah. You know.
I think it's.
I'm afraid of human connection.
What? That's so
terrifying.
The thing about local kopi is the human connection.
Right. I never heard that before. Yeah. That is, what would you say is 50% at least of the thing?
I think it's like more than 50%.
More than 50%?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, if you think about it, for a cup of kopi, then let's say you say ingredients, right? Like actually human labor is a big ingredient. It'll be
it will take up most
of the cost.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. It is. Mm. I think maybe only, 60%, 30%.
Yeah.
Maybe like 10% ingredient cost. The rest of it is mostly flavor.
Maybe what you're offering is customization.
I am. And that's something that we do very well here.
Mm. That's amazing.
Which is why the staff, we train very well.
Right.
We make sure they know, they enjoy what they are doing.
Mm.
And so that translates into the customer service. And somehow, the customer can taste it lor, in the coffee, in the service. Right. Yeah.
That's amazing to hear that because like, I think maybe it's just me like my psychosis. Because I'm a creative, then I always think like, I used to think like the work is what matters. This is all that matters, the work and the quality of the work. In a way, like transposing it to this, I was thinking like the quality of the coffee is all that matters. But then as I get into the industry, I realize actually the work is at most 50% really.
Correct.
It's everything else, like I say, relationship. So I'm amazed also. Actually not amazed, actually it makes sense also that
it's
coffee
applicable.
Is the same thing.
It's crazy that like soft skills work in every industry.
Yes,
right?
yes.
That's what a lot of people don't see hawkers as
what like
as
human
being
connection.
Service
I think
human
often
connection.
They see like hawkers as like being machinery that produce like mass mass market food for
Right. I think with like franchises, like I say Toastbox, I go Toastbox every morning because there's one near our office. Like, I think my expectation is because it's a franchise thing that they people switch around.
Yes.
But actually, like you said three times you know the order already.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't take that long to know that human connection. You
Correct.
Know? Like, I think maybe it's low self-esteem. I always think like, I'm not worth remembering. Like, of course they won't remember me. But actually they do, you know.
It's okay, it just applies to him only.
Yeah, yeah, like,
don't worry about it.
So I think like, what I will try to take away is that next time I go to Toastbox, I will try to acknowledge that connection and say, hey, 你记得我了，谢谢你啊，每次都我不用讲，你就知道是一号 they open, you know.
Yeah, and it's also an acknowledgement that they put in that effort, and you know, it's not easy for the guy to always be there every
day to come to work, turn up for work.
So on his part, he's also making an effort, and for you to acknowledge the effort, it will mean a lot to him. Other than the salary the company gives him.
That's right. That's right. I appreciate that you remember me as a part of your working ritual and your working
day. It's a job satisfaction.
So it makes you satisfied, right?
That salary cannot give you.
See, on the note of that, so we talk about labor, we talk about cost, then we're talking about the idea that I just love hearing the idea that you equate quality and the way you train your staff to the idea that you expect them to uphold a certain level of service, right? So when it comes to the labor, is it just you and your siblings or do you hire people, and how does that work?
So the core team is made up of obviously the three of us, and we each have different roles, and then come down to the store.
Different bowls?
Roles.
Oh, roles. Okay.
角色.
Okay, I thought one. Okay, 角色.
Roles.
Roles, yeah.
Then come down to the store, we actually have a manager at each store right now.
It's not your.
It's not us.
What is manager?
So they take care of the operations and they are usually the Taochu. So you need to rise above. You have to do everything, and then when you are head barista, you will oversee the shop.
So if the Taochu is people that you hire, then what do y'all do like from day to day?
So one of the main roles is to actually come down and QC, drink the coffee
every other day.
It's a spring of surprise, wow.
But every other day, then not surprise already. They will know it's 1, 3, 5.
Ish la.
No, they don't know when.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5 don't come.
Oh, okay, fair enough, fair enough. Just keep them on your toes.
Yeah. Any time of the day.
Yeah.
So we do QC at the stalls, make sure the processes and the ops are running smoothly. And then a lot of the work is actually back-end work. So our social media, our business development, and our R&D. The coffee is easy. Making the coffee is really the easiest part.
She said that coffee is... I was like
mind
relating
blown.
So hard to it. Because I think that way about my art also. I used to think the drawing is the hard part. That's the stuff that is... No, drawing is easy.
You control...
Client, day-to-day work.
Client,
that's the stuff,
the customers, the staff, the
audience,
suppliers.
Yeah.
On the topic of like labor, do you try to hire local? How does that work?
Hawkers are only allowed to hire Singaporeans or PRs.
But then when I go Kopitiam and there's like...
Kopitiam is not a... You mean Kopitiam, the food court?
Like downstairs at my HDB, that's not a hawker, is it?
Ah, so right... A bit 黑暗.
Okay.
Grey
area.
Is that
grey
area?
Right,
what
not
means?
Grey
sure.
area.
Yeah. What's it 黑暗?
Dark.
黑暗 is darkness.
Okay.
Dark side. My understanding is a lot of the Kopitiams are private enterprises.
Yes.
So you have people like Kim San Ling, and then you have...
Fu,
Kim San Ling.
Is that Kim San Ling?
That's hilarious.
Last time got S11.
Okay, there's the blue colour and white colour striped one. Look like Barcelona jersey.
No, I don't know.
Okay, Argentina jersey, y'all don't know?
And there's Kim San Ling.
And there's Kim San Ling.
Okay, I get it. So if you're at one of these like big government food centres, you'll be a hawker lah.
Yes, you are a hawker.
If you're Maxwell, you're a food... Maxwell Food Centre, you'll be hawker.
Yes.
If you're Old Airport Road, you'll be hawker.
Correct. Under
but then
NEA.
If you're under HDB flat, you are it's a private enterprise.
Usually it's a private enterprise. It's owned by a private owner.
So the quota, there's a quota there.
The quota
is 35%
foreigner quota for work permit, I believe.
Correct.
Right. But then so now we know that if they work here, they are like under a sole proprietor.
Correct.
Kind of arrangement.
So in hawkers and in kopitiams, usually it's owned by a company that is registered, and usually they would already have staff that may not be on the floor, may not be in the kopitiam, maybe like admin staff, and that will make up your quota. So then they are able to, yes, right. Locals. Then they are able to hire.
Oh, I see. I see.
Malaysians. Usually Malaysians have a lower quota to hit before you can hire.
Right,
so
right,
Malaysians.
Right. I see.
Yeah. So usually these enterprises are able to hire and they are allowed. It's legal.
Yeah.
So everybody that we see here are all local.
Local, Singaporeans or PRs.
Oh, PR also counts. I see. I
yeah.
see. Wow, does that make hiring difficult?
Of course.
Like if you want to hire, like the first question, not the first question, like earlier we talked about, when I intro, I also made a mistake, a misunderstanding that
a boo-boo.
It's hard to get young local hawkers. So what's that situation? Like, is it very common? What's the problem there? You know?
You get a lot of young Singaporeans who open hawker stalls, who start out fresh, and the reality is, after a while, they get very, very tired because they have to deal with everything from morning till night, handling work and then supplies, and then a lot of food. They have to do prep, food prep.
Yeah, so, they wake up very early,
yes,
prep the noodle.
Correct.
All the time,
then now with social media, they also have to handle their own social media.
That's right.
So a lot of them need to hire help so that they can ease their workload at the store.
Yeah.
Whether it's cashiering or just simple food prep,
yep,
taking orders. Yep.
But this help can only be Singaporean.
This help can only be Singaporean. Mm, and I think if you ask yourself, if there's no prospect of career development or higher salary or increase in salary, would you put yourself in a hawker center?
Well, I think I would do it as more like a shareholder, right?
Yes,
on
correct.
Shareholder basis,
correct,
which is probably what you're doing as well.
What do you mean?
Like kind
of
like
own part of the company.
You own a company instead of being an employee of the company.
Yeah.
Right, right.
This, if I'm a hawker, I'll do that.
Yeah, then it makes
right.
I'm okay with not having progression.
Yes.
Then there's other things like I think like young people think about like non-aircon job.
Yes.
Or like I'm
correct.
Not just standing. You know, I'm standing, walking, lifting things,
correct,
washing things.
Mm.
Like
correct.
It's a lot of physical things. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah,
probably there's a connotation there also. Is there?
Yes. I mean, it's still tagged lah, this preconceived notion that it's just a lot of dirty washing, a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of manual labor.
Right.
And it is true.
It
I
is
agree.
True.
I still do it
yeah.
when I'm here at the store. But like you said, there are a lot of hawkers opening their own shops.
Yeah.
So they are shareholders naturally.
Yeah.
But they can unable to hire because
So they are forced to be solopreneurs lah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Oh.
Yes.
And I guess it's also very hard to use tech to do the job that hawkers do.
For like, now, like, haven't come
it's hard
up
to
with
get. I mean, not now. Like,
yeah,
there's not a robot who come and serve at the kopitiam yet, right? Mm. Or there isn't.
I think don't have. Eh.
So
I think
saw,
they probably
like,
automate
that
things
way.
That they can automate. Like, I have a machine that makes for you, that brew for you, and it
have
is good
recently
enough.
The,
right?
Do you see that viral video about the Pongo machine? It's a kopi, he tarik the kopi,
They
went and then he
and then he pour on the floor.
No, I think he pour on the machine, the rest of the automated system.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So not quite there yet. No,
yeah.
I don't see.
You don't dream of labor.
I'll put the food.
The anti-work labor.
Oh yeah, we don't dream of labor,
yeah,
that's right.
Anti-work
that's
woman.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
He tang ping. Or he pailan. Shit, that's
is
that's
that
rough.
What happened? The machine poured coffee on itself.
He poured on his
colleagues.
Counterparts.
Ah,
no,
okay.
It's all still machines lah.
Yeah, colleagues lah.
Yeah,
because they're all machines, right? That's right.
Yeah, it was quite bad.
So is it, do you see it changing? Like, is there, how long have you been doing this? Like, this?
I think we are hoping to set
a precedent yeah.
Yeah, for future, for other hawkers, old or new, and for the authorities to kind of take notice lah. So what we do actually is when we hire, we actually allow for career progression and even profit sharing.
What, how
yeah.
Do, yeah.
What does career progression look
yeah,
like?
What does it look like?
So for same lah, we have management trainees and then we have just if you just want to be forever
part-timer.
At the store,
yeah,
that's fine.
I see. They call it individual contributor nowadays. Like,
oh, is it?
You just but in this case not really.
Technically IC is let's say you're a head barista and you only want to do barista, you don't want to manage people.
Yeah, I don't manage.
That's
then
IC
I just
role.
Keep doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
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 yeah.
So very specific lor. So we also break down the roles here.
Uh-huh.
If you want to be boss, you just be boss, point of sale, so our cashier. So you always take order and you make sure you're very good at it lor. If you're not, we'll move you to another role, like making coffee. Just keep making coffee on.
Right.
But of course the disadvantages are heavy lifting,
yes,
a lot of washing. Mm. So for example, I hate washing.
Yeah.
And
most people
I,
do
yeah, exactly. You would think, right? But
you're
no
not making, Or some people like it.
Some people love it because they face the four walls. They don't need to face
customer.
Actually,
I'm one of these people.
Yeah.
Because my wife cook, then I wash.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And I love, because I get to scrub it clean. There's a satisfaction there.
Correct.
Right. So you can find these people also.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So then the cashier role, nobody want to do because they don't like to front face. They don't like to deal with customers.
Mm.
But I love it because I'm very good at it and I enjoy it. There's people like me. Mm. So then, of course, we'll just segregate them more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, of course, if you want career progression, like Nikki like Shermin, she's done hospitality.
Mm.
So we're actually moving her through the roles and then eventually to manage the franchise arm of our business.
That's very cool. But in a way, like, you can only start to have these tiers when you scale up a little bit, right? Then
correct.
You got other branches.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. But you also can still only have IC, lor, individual contributors.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Why can't we corporatize something like that? A hot, small hawker store.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Yeah,
it gives them job security as well. We offer insurance.
Right.
We offer bonuses. We have performance appraisals every 6 months.
Wow. Oh, what? Okay, what's like an appraisal? Okay, let's just pretend I am a cashier now. Then I suck at my job.
Right.
Then you just tell me like, what's wrong with what I did.
So Raymond, so today is your 6 month appraisal, right?
Yeah.
And we've gathered feedback from your fellow colleagues, as well as some of the customers, and of course we've observed you at your work.
Oh no.
You know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're very good at what you do, but of course, there are some improvements here according to our KPIs.
Mm.
What, so we have KPIs.
What are the things I didn't touch on my KPIs?
So, accuracy of your cash exchange, because we offer cash and QR code transactions. So there are a lot of discrepancies, so you might want to take note of that. So maybe we can go through your process when you chat with the customer to make sure that you always get it right.
Mm.
Yes, and then of course, dealing with the customer, so more soft skills, see where we can improve that for you. If you're interested, of course, you know, we can send you for courses. So we actually sponsor courses.
Mm.
Like
Nikki
and...
That was cool.
So Nikki and my other guy, my other full-timer, they've been for barista courses, like with the espresso machine, just so they can learn the other side of coffee.
That's so cool.
It's something that we believe in, you know, continue learning so that it applies here as well.
Yeah. So one store, then how many people operate? I'm hearing
it's
like three or four.
Really dependent on
the people.
The business there, the traffic. Over here is our first store and most popular store.
Yeah.
At any one time, there's five people inside the store.
Oh, wow.
Five meter by five meter.
Very small space for five.
Crazy.
Yes. But we've made it so that we've segregated the roles into a specific space.
Oh, they got their own area.
Correct. Right. So they don't cross each other.
Right.
It's also about making the
optimizing
work environment
space.
Work for you. So we're always changing and improving.
Oh, that's so cool. It reminds me of, you know, McDonald's. There was a movie, The Founder.
Exactly.
Then they draw the blueprint on the floor. Then,
correct.
Okay, you move here, then this goes there.
It is the same.
So you look at the top blueprint, then you think, okay, you move like that.
Correct. So that you won't clash into each other,
right.
And then we maximize productivity.
And you're still fine tuning, right?
Correct.
Branch to branch, different layout, then different space, you know. Then maybe the tap is here, then the tap has to be there.
Yes.
So it's problem solving.
Can we extend the tap somewhere to provide water for this role? Yeah.
Right. And it's never done one.
It's never done.
Something to.
A demand might change, you know, we might add a new product. The flow changes as well.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That y'all can do so, like, it's really a lot more than I can imagine. Like, the idea that you have this kind of, the progression thing, I'm just blown away that you try so hard. And it's important to people, no? So you have to, you know, do these things to keep people, right?
I think it is very important to clarify that I'm a young hawker with dreams to expand, to do well. There are hawkers who just really want to do this and retire, and that is absolutely fine.
Yes.
Sometimes they take their time to do like one order.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong.
I think as long as the market supports it,
right. Correct, enough people want to pay and wait.
If you want to wait and deal with like a rude auntie, then
yes.
I mean, the food good enough, then okay lah, I'll wait lah.
Yes. Correct, exactly.
But then if the food is not good and you're also rude, then okay lah.
Yeah lor, I'll find someone else.
It's up to them to choose lah where they want to zeng the thing.
Correct.
I feel that way sometimes. Like there's a very nice nasi lemak store near my house. But the queue is so insanely long that I queue until I get upset. But also then I zoom out and think, well, it's their choice. I shouldn't force them to scale.
Yes.
Just because if I don't want to wait in the hot sun, then I don't wait.
Yeah,
I'm sure they know. Yes. It is up to them to decide whether they want to address a pain point or not. It might cost so much for them to appeal to the authority or the land space to ask their neighbor they can build awning or... So what right do I have?
Yes, this right. is the exact kind of
balance,
thought process we need more of our customers to have.
Yes,
to
yes,
be a little
yes.
bit more understanding, to be a little bit more generous in giving bad reviews. Like,
oh, bad reviews.
Yes, like not worth the hype. What hype? The hype not I give one, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, nobody hype it. Nobody hype it.
Why? I don't wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to make you a bad cup of coffee. I want to ruin your day.
I mean, you look at Google reviews, because my friend runs a F&B establishment.
Right,
like,
right.
You disagree a bit, you say no already, then they will give a one-star review.
Correct. So like, it's a little bit unfair to struggling businesses to be so quickly to critique. You don't like it, doesn't mean he doesn't like it. So like, and you cannot say, oh, the standard drop or like, such bad, we don't come here. Like,
I never force you to come here. I have my store, I wait here. You choose to come and join my queue, right?
Oh my God, I also feel that about...
I'll pay sometimes.
Because people sound like, they're very preachy or they keep saying things I disagree. Then nobody asks you to see what.
There are plenty other comics and other podcasts you can listen to.
Yeah, go see all these things. I think people need to understand like how free market works.
Yes.
Right. You don't want, then you...
Algorithm also lah, because it feels to, I think our readers sometimes like we force the comic in their face because it appears like, on their feed, but that's because their friends share it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like we force you to read the thing.
And I guess for you, cause you get a bit of like media coverage, right? Then people will think like, oh, look at all these people like hyping her.
Yeah, cause they'll put like 10 things you must try at Amoy Street Food Center. Then. It feels like it's a compulsion, right?
But it's not like you go tell people.
Yeah, it's not like you.
You must try. It's other people say one.
Yeah. Correct, exactly.
But I think like to ask the general public to have this level of understanding is maybe asking a lot. And I feel that about people who get angry at us.
I don't think so. Why is it asking a lot?
Because I feel like to have this kind of perspective, you need to be patient enough to understand business. And as a customer, I feel also maybe local culture. And I don't want to be too blatant about it because I'm not local, I'm Malaysian, right? I feel like different countries have different perspectives, right? I feel like Singapore tends to be very customer-oriented and people can be very entitled.
Yes.
Whereas, for example, I went to Germany, for example. The people treat me like shit on the service people because they're employee-oriented. And what I found is that a lot of European companies like in Germany, they will focus on keeping the employee happy and hence the product is better. And that's fine too. But then on that level, I don't like it. But I mean, it's just a different thing. America, for example, also very customer oriented. So as a result, the customer is very entitled, lor. So I feel like it's good that we have this thing that we can say it, and I think that will make people understand. But to expect the average person to have this thing, I feel like it will set you up for disappointment if you feel like everybody should have this kind of wisdom, you know.
I think also because most people got like short term. I mean, okay, I think
I just
like,
want to enjoy now.
They have a limited. Bunch of things they care about. Like, okay, first of all, I can care about like the 20 closest people to me. But I ask me care about like someone in Somalia, I think very difficult.
No lah.
Okay, but I feel like it's the same way for like issues also. Most people are driven by short term immediate issues.
Right.
So when they come to our page or like your store, they only care for that 5 to 10 minutes they are here. Then after that they straight away disengage and do something else.
Correct,
so they never ever delve into the deeper part of why the stores are that?
Why things are the way they are? Do you feel that with other things? Because I honestly sometimes I have to catch myself, you know. Like I would try to enjoy a thing, like I was saying the queue for the nasi lemak. Then I get angry. Then wait a minute, that's not quite fair. But I have to really take the effort.
I do too. Honestly, it's.
I think it's something we can try to keep advocating, and that will make for a better gracious culture.
Maybe, just more kind and more gracious. Yeah. Maybe not towards. Doesn't have to be my business or just the next person.
I think just in general, like when you see a business problem, you take time to understand why it works that way. Then I feel like you'll be more empathetic already.
Yeah.
I think many people criticize because they'll never be in a position to go start a business.
Correct.
So they it's easier to just say you know, fuck them, so inefficient.
Yeah.
It is.
But they don't understand. Mm.
Takes one to know one. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think a quality that would be easy to kind of preach. And practice is just kindness and graciousness.
Actually, that's true. Even if you don't know the macro, just be nice to people.
Just be a little bit,
You don't like, just don't join the queue maybe, or just step out.
Yeah.
But don't need to not worth the hype and
down.
Try to hurt people, you know, with the review.
Like, write a song and dance about how bad something is, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of complaints, and other than like entitled customers, what are like a few of your most like biggest complaints about, you know, running a hawker business in Singapore?
Dealing with the authorities.
Okay. In what sense?
So for example, Amoy is run by NEA, so National Environment Agency.
Yep.
And most recently, they've created SFA, the Singapore Food Authority.
Yep. Mm.
So I know this because I'm the hawker chairman here, and I understand these little political changes.
Mm.
So
hawker chairman, what was it?
Oh, so a lot of hawker centres have a hawker chairman, elected hawker chairman.
Oh.
So this hawker chairman will, on behalf of all the hawkers, deal with the authorities, usually the NEA.
Like,
like a village mayor kind of thing.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So you are like Amoy Street Food Centre?
I am Amoy's hawker chairman.
Wow.
Amoy Street Food Centre's hawker chairman. Yes.
Can you put it in the intro?
Yeah.
I'd rather be known as Coffee Break.
Okay.
So in your dealings with the authorities, you were saying NEA,
so usually
SFA.
I deal direct with the person who is in charge of this hawker centre. So NEA will assign, like just now there's a gentleman, he's from SFA. He is assigned to watch over this hawker centre.
I thought you were asking for donations. Sorry, SFA.
Sorry.
Yeah, so whatever complaints the hawkers have, I will bring it up to NEA. And we will try to mitigate or whatever, try to make the hawker happy as well. So
is it usually things like upkeep, is it like birds and toilet and kind of thing la?
Rodent problems, sewage problems, electricity,
water supply,
cleanliness.
Right.
Yeah, but that has been segregated.
Right.
So NEA deals with the external parts of the hawker centre itself.
The facade.
Yes, the tables,
what you see,
whatever, the fans. That's NEA's jurisdiction.
I see, yeah.
Then SMA will deal with the stall.
Oh, I see.
The stall owners,
the
stall keepers, and the stall itself.
So are there overlapping parts where they sign the tai chi each other, like, or this one them, then this one them?
In Amoy, it's a little bit, there's one more because we deal with MND.
MND,
this building belongs
yes.
to MND. This
brown
colour facade.
Right.
It's MND. So technically,
there's three.
We are their tenants.
Yes,
our landlords.
Mm.
Wow.
Yes. So we have
so complex.
Holy Trinity, no, I'm just saying.
Speaking of rent, right? Do you think like rental rates for...
Okay. Very good question.
Yeah, you made a face. Okay, I just continue.
Go ahead.
Yeah, do you think is it fair for... I mean, do you feel like you're paying like a fair price for rental?
Yeah.
In this part of town?
Yeah, got margin left or not?
You say free market, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, even though it's a government agency, NEA still needs to make money somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm young, so maybe I'm a bit more
idealistic.
Not idealistic,
practical.
But practical.
Aware.
Yeah. So you know somehow some places they can sell 60 cents coffee.
Yeah.
Mm. We've been compared before. Why this coffee 160 but then uncle can sell 60 cents?
Yeah.
Why? Because his rent is lower than mine.
Right.
Okay, and he's in the heartlands.
Mm.
And he's probably first generation, so they actually enjoy a subsidized rate.
Mm.
And being in the heartlands, usually the rent is a lot lower. I'd say at least one third of what, maybe even more than one third of what we pay.
Mm.
In this row alone, there are four different kinds of rental tiers.
Yeah.
Okay. So you cannot judge our product price just because the same product has two different prices. It doesn't work like that. The uncle can give you 60 cents because his costs are low.
Mm.
My costs are high.
Right.
And I turn over high.
Mm.
So I can charge more. Mm. And also because I need to
It's a different
meta,
la, right?
Yeah, yeah. Different. Yeah.
So I say it's fair because if you are a new hawker, you bid for a stall.
Mm.
Highest bidder wins. Very natural at an auction. How bad you want it, you bid high, lor. And if you're desperate, you'll make the business work. If you're not desperate, you bid low, you don't get
but
it.
That's all it is. It's just price. They don't look at track record and quality.
No.
Or it's just pure price.
Yes, if you're a new if you're a new entrant.
Because new entrant. Nothing else to
care. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I guess if it's expensive, you can also go bid in the Heartland.
Correct.
It'll be cheaper.
Right. Correct. Correct. So NEA releases a list of available stores for bidding, and you can just go and apply and send in your bid. And then at the end of the month, they will release the winner of the bid slot.
So high hawker rental rates also because of the result, because we're in the CBD here.
Yes.
Because I was looking at Commercial Guru.
Yes.
Just now, early on, to see like normal private one, how much it'll be. It's like.
Yes.
I think what is like 31k for like a whole cafe.
A whole cafe is in the whole space.
Yeah, the whole
first
space.
Floor.
Not even a stall in that space.
It's bigger. No, right. So I mean, store will be cheaper, but they do not have individual stores for rent.
Okay, so that's 31k.
Yeah.
But is that a lot? Is that very little? I don't know.
I think it's a lot.
It's a lot.
But I think
it's the market here.
Yeah, it's the private market.
Right.
But then within Amoy, it's like HDB.
Okay.
So things are subsidized compared to the market rate there, but it is still, it can still
it
be
still
expensive.
It has to be higher than the Heartlands, because, I mean, like you say, the government, even as government, they have to be sustainable and reflect the ebb and flow of market. Mm.
Correct.
Okay, but I think there's a lot of people online who also say high rents are killing hawkers. Like, how true do you think this statement is?
I think high rent, you must understand how it works first. Mm. If you are a new hawker, you pay the high, let's say you really want this store and you bid for like 3,500, your rent alone, huh? Mm. So you have to pay 3,500 a month for 3 years. That is the NEA contract.
Yeah.
So for 3 years, you pay every month.
Okay.
You are a new hawker, you must understand. Nobody knows who you are. Mm. They don't know whether your food nice or not. Mm. So some people will be very cautious.
Yes.
Sometimes you don't break even or gain a following even after 3 years.
Mm. Wow.
So which means, you just do the math, 2,500 times 36 months. Wow. You have to
tank.
That's
a lot of money to be able to put aside.
And that's why a lot of new hawkers, they do it themselves. Because they don't need to start paying for another staff.
Mm. Oh, I see.
And that is why you see a lot of family businesses, they drive Mercedes. Because they pay their family members minimal. And then they do a lot of work because it's family, so they chunk for each other. Then of course, maybe they got other benefits, you know.
But I don't understand how that results in a Mercedes. What do you mean? Because they don't have to pay competitive rates for the labor.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Then they all can give bigger bonuses or whatnot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I've heard these things, these two
these two opposing
narratives
of hawkers. One is, you don't look at a hawker, he drives Mercedes. Then the other one is, look at the hawker, they're so poor.
The high rents are killing them.
So,
the ones who drive Mercedes are first generation hawkers, those with the damn long queues.
Established already, right?
Yes, established already. Those are the ones that drive Mercedes.
First generation.
Moved from the streets. We call them first generation.
Wow.
So clean up in the 1970s, they moved from the streets to hawker centers.
Oh, I see.
Those are first generation.
Last time, Penang at it.
Right.
I
thought first gen means first time here.
Oh, no.
Right. First gen means old.
From
the
street.
Established.
LKY time.
Yeah.
People wear short time.
1970s time.
I see.
When the whole movement of hawkers started.
So what I'm also hearing is that high rent is a thing and it hurts, but in the market forces, it makes sense because you can charge higher turnover. But what you seem to not so much appreciate is the idea that people complain and compare across Heartland and CBD rates and go, why like that?
Yes.
But without understanding the underlying market forces, right?
Yes.
Right.
Sometimes the media also perpetuates these.
Yes.
Yeah, so
In various, I think, degrees of accuracy. Aggressiveness. Oh, yeah. And because they might say this uncle has not raised rates in 60 years or something.
They don't
go deeper into why.
Yes.
You know, so even though you don't say it, by highlighting this example of an uncle seemingly absorbing inflation, you are not it's almost like, then don't go to other people, go to this one because it absorbs for you, but it's also where.
I think there's also merit in saying sometimes for some certain F&B operators, right, they actually own the property that
they are in. Yes. Ambang Liang Tofu, that kind.
Yeah. Hey, don't name names,
McDonald's.
So they got no rent. So they got no rent. So they already break even long ago already. Like your grandfather time break even already. Yeah, right. Not grandfather time. But then like, so they can charge lower.
I love this. It's like an anomaly where you see like, they don't use the space efficiently. Right? It'll be like,
correct.
Like, oh, 10 God. Tables very sparsely. Like Malaysia, like they just Then they're at the back just doing their own thing, you know.
They customer walk in, they don't greet you.
Yes.
Sit down and you take your order yourself.
So this is like your first gen.
Actually, kind, it's kind of like hotel business. You know, hotel business make money not because of the accommodation or stuff you pay. It's because the property rise in value.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So that's, in a way,
yeah.
That's a meta also.
Right.
Yeah, but yes. I mean, I completely understand. When they do say like high rents are killing hawkers, also because there's a culture of not paying a lot for hawker food also. So they get squeezed both ways. One is like, rent is really highish already. Then after that, like people don't want to pay some more. Like what are your thoughts on?
No, that's the next question I want to ask. Yeah. So okay, I tag on to that.
Okay, yes.
I think the idea of what a hawker means, right? By definition, right, there's an expectation of cheap and good.
Good.
So what are your thoughts on that? Like, is this connotation correct, wrong?
How do you balance it? I myself, if I go down to a hawker center, I expect the food to be cheap and good. But here's the caveat.
Yep.
Cheap is subjective.
Yeah. Mm. It's where.
Where.
Yeah.
And whether you accept it.
Yep.
Some people come and tell me the younger office crowd. Yep. 160, very reasonable. You know, sometimes this chain sells for $2.40 and the cup smaller than you, the younger generation.
You ask auntie uncle pay this kind.
Huh? Wow. 快六, 果表, 果松耶, 没有糖, 没有奶耶.
That's right.
I think it also reflects like inequality in Singapore. Some people can find it affordable, some people can find it not. And also, like, when equality used to be less in Singapore, like smaller, like, everyone will agree, okay, 80 cents is a reasonable price.
Yes.
But now that some groups are, the fortunes have not done so well,
that's
other groups
have
done
that's
amazingly.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
so it's very jarring lah. When I go to supposedly the same theme, which is hawker, just because I'm in CBD or town, like the rates are so high, it's like, I can't even afford hawker food now. No, you can afford maybe heartland hawker food. So it's like, even within this hawker class, there's a separation
or segregation. When you say cheap is subjective, I'm guessing you're compared to like a private establishment outside of this.
It could be, or it could just be my competitors behind me. Yeah.
Like we talk about this all the time. Everybody will say, everybody in the street in Singapore will agree that we must keep hawker culture alive.
You must.
We will agree until the high heavens. But sometimes I think like, it may take us as the consumer to be willing to pay more actually.
Yes.
And we always expect, I don't know why, it seems to be this expectation that hawker culture, for it to stay alive, it must remain affordable. And affordable to them is not. Don't rise with inflation. Right? Everything else rise with inflation. Hawker cannot rise with inflation.
Maybe you use like the 1990 matrix of affordability.
Yeah. Like, but it's not absolute price. Right? It should be also scaling with your income, which also scales.
Yeah. Okay, the problem now is income in Singapore. Last time, everyone like that moved together.
Yeah.
Now one is one group go like that, then the other group.
Inequality.
Sometimes like that, or go a bit only. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's hard. Yeah. It's a very tough conversation to have.
Yeah. Because if you ask me personally, I mean, like, if it's good chicken rice, $8, I'm okay. Like, if you warrant the thing. Or, like, you know, like.
Did you see he roll his eyes? $8 already, chicken rice.
No. I'm saying. I roll because, right, I know this is a controversial statement that commenters will pick up on.
You are not personally rolling. He's anticipating angry comment. But that's just me personally, so, you know, you don't pay, right?
I mean, if you pay $24 for Eggs Benedict or whatever, fuck shit.
Yeah, why not, right?
Okay, what?
And there are also very interesting hawker concepts like here is the noodle story.
Downstairs.
It's so amazing, and I don't know if the store is here also. There's a store that sells this donburi thing. And it only sells donburi, only one bowl, like $10, that's the flat price. You only buy that one thing. I don't think it's here, somewhere else.
Yeah, I think not here.
But it's a very interesting concept set in a hawker thing that people queue up like damn long to buy. But it's a $10 price tag, which is not something you typically pay for, like your cai fan or your chicken rice, you know?
If you think about it, maybe to you now it sounds interesting, but actually, it will become history tomorrow.
That's right.
Oh my god, wait, okay, I had this question. I had this question, like, if we go on my phone, that's why I reach my pocket. Like,
right.
If we go down 20 years' time, right, and this trend continues, Singaporeans no longer, continue to not want to pay more for hawker food. What do you think the landscape will look like?
The odds of hawker culture surviving, is it?
I say my opinion first. Actually, I think it will survive, but a lot less people were doing it than the people who do it, like, charge, like,
very high.
Them high on. Like $36 Char Kway Teow.
And so be it.
Yeah. Because the market had decided this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not decided by one person. It's decided by many, many factors and many, many players. So if we all collectively decide, you know, we're just going to let a select few hawkers survive and that's all there is to this culture, then
that's what it
then
is.
You got to pay for it. Right, supply, demand exceeds supply. So, but that is a product of your own actions, your own decisions. It's a consequence.
Yeah,
so
and it's actions. It's not opinions. That's why I say, like, hawker... You ask everybody now, should hawker culture survive? Yes. But are you willing to pay for it with your wallet? Not necessarily. And maybe that's not the solution. Like just now you roll your eyes to think. There are many forces at play. There is the hawkers themselves. There is the buyers. Then there's also the authorities. Right, it can come from a lot of places.
I've also seen this narrative online, which I disagree with. It's kind of saying, like, if hawker price increase, then how will poor people afford meals? But in my opinion, it's like, why should these people trying to run business be responsible for providing for the poor? Because
I need to be sustainable.
Business is
business,
right?
Yeah.
I feel like if anything, the poor is the government's problem to solve. It is not hawkers' problem to solve. Mm. I mean, that's my perspective. Like, what's your take on that?
I think I quite agree with you with what you said. I'm not sure if it's entirely the government's problem. It's a topic I'm not very familiar with.
Fair.
But we do, as a hawker, maybe myself, I do try to accommodate to people who may not be able to afford it lah. Try to keep prices low.
Yep.
We haven't raised our prices since 2018. And we're probably
pre-COVID.
I think try versus like making it mandatory is like different thing, right? Of course you will try your best to be like a decent person.
Correct.
And help out whenever possible. But it should not be
it shouldn't
be forced obligated upon you.
Yeah,
this social responsibility.
It is a social responsibility, and it's social because hawkers are not the only people in the society.
Exactly.
Are you not social? Are you
That's right. I'm part of society.
Hey, he's social. He's part of society.
A social worker.
Me too. Hi. Yeah.
So, I think too much has been covered about hawkers needing to do this. We should flip the role.
We all have a part to play.
We all have a part to play. Yeah. It can be as simple as buying from your
local...
don't buy Starbucks. Buy mine. You know, one drink will pay so many things.
Yeah, that's right.
Starbucks is a conglomerate. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Don't buy McDonald's. Eat the Uncle Hainanese Western food.
Yes.
Like, both are healthy
support
anyway.
Both are French fries and burgers.
So on the note of like, you know, it was an interesting note. Like we were just saying this morning, we talk about tradition. Traditions start from somewhere, and at one point, like, traditions were innovations.
Yes.
Right? So
correct.
I see that y'all got so many like interesting flavors and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So first question I want to ask is more like, when you do these things, does your dad say anything about it?
He loves it.
Oh, he loves it.
He was the one who egged us on.
Wow.
To he try like black sesame and matcha and all this.
He wasn't
not
that adventurous lah, but he was the one.
Hazelnut,
yeah, he was the one who was like, no, you need to set the trend. You need to learn to be different. You need to set yourself apart from your competitors.
Wow.
Oh shit, I had a question also. Because I had a, what is your USP?
Unique selling point.
Unique selling point.
Yeah.
Our...
I mean the different flavors lah, right?
I think our young staff leh.
Oh, young staff.
Yeah.
A whole group of them behind a hawker store.
Yeah,
you look in, you see all young people.
It is quite amazing to see.
So that is one big unique selling point.
Yeah.
And of course our narrative, I think.
That's right.
And in the end, it all boils down to the quality of the product, lor. They see that and they'll be like, okay, I'll try it. And then you need to prove it with your product, lah.
I think that's great. Because, like, you also have a sort of... I feel like there's a respect for tradition also. I mean, like, since 1935.
Yeah.
Then, like, you have to balance that with also, like, how do you keep the best parts of the old that people still want, but then also, like, push to introduce new flavors and concepts.
The thing that will define your success is that you have a very strong product foundation. And for us, it is our traditional kopi. And using that, we're able to kind of springboard into all the different flavors.
So it's not like you left it completely. You are using it as an extension to try.
And it forms the very basis of our business. It could be our vision, our mission in our products as well.
It's like you got hard skill, I mean, soft skill important, but ultimately hard skill is still still the core of it.
Correct.
But you use
correct.
Soft skill to amplify that.
Correct.
And that's like your marketing, like the narrative.
R&D, you know, trying new things, trying new flavors.
I think it's the same for every profession, every other
Absolutely.
Business.
Or money-making activity.
Yeah.
You're creative, you use that, then you do something else.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
So maybe like, last few questions, like just to conclude. You can add also if you have some more to...
Oh, I'll look at my phone. Okay, you save it.
So like you have like a bit of an e-commie thing. Like you have this, if you go on their website, they have like they sell the beans, you know, like which you get from Indonesia, right?
Yes.
Then it's done in a traditional way,
yes,
is it?
Yes.
Like, so is that something that you are going into? Like is that something you all hope to expand big time?
You probably hear this a lot, but really because of COVID-19, we had to quickly diversify and learn that a brick and mortar shop is not the way to go,
right.
Especially in a saturated business environment such as Singapore.
The costs are high.
Correct.
Yeah, costs
so
are high,
we needed to be able to earn more doing less and not being dependent on just having people come to the store.
Yes.
Because clearly Circuit Breaker did not allow that. And so we just nice when Circuit Breaker started, our e-shop was already going live. So we just kind of accelerated that law.
Right.
And then with delivery and then corporate events. Yeah. And
I think that's great because like there's a big coffee culture thing, especially like I'm on YouTube a lot lah, then like I don't even care much about it, but I just like watching people make coffee. But I don't see so much of that nylon sock method, you know, that old way of making coffee.
Correct.
It's more of those like French press or drip Vietnamese drip coffee, that kind. So I feel like there's a space for it content wise, you know.
Correct.
Like I would love to see maybe y'all try that. So if I buy your beans, for example, like, then what do I do with it? Like who is buying these beans and do they do at home or like what?
So like content creation is something we also don't really, it's something that we're looking to do, but it's not our core business.
Yeah, I'm not saying you must do lah. I'm just saying there's a gap lah.
Yeah, so that gap can be filled.
Yeah.
Maybe not by us. But because there is a third wave specialty coffee culture that swept through here. So
third wave specialty coffee.
Yes. So it was a very good opportunity for us to kind of hop on that wave. Because people will buy the coffee and they already know how to brew it using a French press.
Yes.
So then they'll use those
also
methods.
You can use that across a different method.
Yes, yes.
Also
so
cool.
That bridging the local kopi, Nanyang kopi, and the with the specialty coffee is something that I think still very unheard of.
Yes.
But people like to discover for themselves.
Well, that would be so cool to watch, like in a content kind of way. I would love that.
I had the feels when you said Nanyang coffee. Then I was like, oh yeah. I forgot like the taste that comes to Singapore is like very unique from what was originally in China.
Yes, that's right.
It's a very strong local coffee drinking culture that we have.
Right.
And that is something that we kind of made use of.
Right.
And that's what Starbucks and all your coffee chains made use of as well.
Right.
And all your local chains as well.
Mm.
And it's something that we can make use of, long. It's an opportunity.
So last question from me, then maybe if you have stuff you can add on, right? What is like, you are opening other branches and stuff, and from what I can see from the photo, it looks like slightly different. Because it's not hawker, like there's this thing that you have your own table and chair kind of thing.
That was
this is the Science Park
before, the Science Park one.
So what is, like, you are opening other branches and what is that like? Is it?
We actually closed it down just before
the Science Park one.
That was very successful. We were very well received in that area.
Right.
Pharmaceuticals, school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, because of COVID, because of work from home.
Damn it, COVID.
Yeah. So we had to shut that down.
But then would it be still viable now as a...
Yeah.
So that size, yes. We had a big one in GSH Plaza. Now it's called Plus behind Republic Plaza. That wasn't such a great concept because we tried to introduce food, and I think clearly people knew that was not something we did well.
Right.
So people came for the coffee, but then it wasn't enough to pay the rent.
I see.
Yes. Oh. So our concept now is really just for hawker centres, small kiosks, takeaway.
That's great.
That's why cafe quite zo ma. You faster drink, take a break, and then you just go quite zo.
Quickly sit.
Yes, that was the essence of what my dad wanted.
Right. This is the original signboard.
Yeah, original signboard. This is original signboard.
Oh, look at the F. It's a very special font, like. You know, the way that the indentation.
Yeah,
you know?
We cannot find this.
Yeah, I've never seen that font, you know. It's quite unique, yeah.
23 years.
Wow, okay.
Okay, that's all from me. Do you have any additional questions?
I have questions, but like, they don't fit anywhere.
Just ask. Let's see what we can
So chat, I guess like, you know? What is like the minimum amount of kopi you have to charge to be...
It's so mathematical.
Sustainable. Or at least like, not just kopi, but also for other popular dishes. Like, how much you have to charge for hawkers to survive long term?
What's the sweet spot?
Yeah. What do you think is a margin that will make this industry viable for young people to...
I think for a lot of businesses, a 30 to 40% profit margin is sustainable.
Yeah.
So you want to aim for 30 to 40%. I'll put it in very simple terms. Over here, where... we have 5-star. I leave the math to you. Your listeners can go and do the math.
Okay, they're very good at this.
Do the math.
So, we have 5-star. Average salary is about 2,300 per star. Mm. Say 5 lah. Every day, Monday to Friday.
Yep.
So, we go monthly lah. My coffee, average price is $3.50. Average, okay? And I sell about, over here, very lucky, is about 1,000 cups a day over a span of 7 hours only.
Right.
Okay. So I give you the numbers, you go and do the math.
Okay.
Am I profitable?
7 hours of operation, or do you need to do prep?
7 hours of sale.
Sale.
Prep
right.
is about 1 hour.
I see. Yes. Okay.
The salaries don't count, ma, because they go by month, right?
Right.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
2003, 5 stars.
Got rent also, yeah. Huh? Rent also. Right.
And then you think about rent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you think about your overheads, your cost of goods.
Cereals, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe right. It comes out to about 6,000 for me, and I'm on the higher quality side.
Yeah.
That's for me.
Right.
If you say for maybe my competitor behind, who has also been in the business as long as I have, if not longer, also second generation.
Yep.
His overheads and cost of goods will be much lower than mine.
Mm.
Why? Because firstly, his rent is considered first generation. He's from the streets.
Oh.
Secondly, there's only two of them. His mom and him.
Right. And okay? It's his mom.
Yes. Yeah. Third, he sells toast and eggs. Right. Food profit margin always higher.
Mm.
Always higher. Yes.
Why now sell food and eggs?
I have more than enough to handle already. Right? I got toast lah, but I don't serve eggs lah. Yeah.
I just find it funny that from the streets give you some cred. They can get
street low
rent from the government.
Sounds like it. Maybe sounds like it. Yeah. Maybe that's why.
I was from the streets, yo.
Yeah.
Oh shit, that's hilarious.
So, his model and my model are very, very different. Even though we are in the same hawker center, we sell very similar things.
Almost very near to each other also. Yes. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's so cool that even among like all the different hawkers, there's so much variance in business model.
Strategy.
We have how many yu tangs here, leh? And there's a very famous one behind. Right. And a second famous one.
All doing different model.
One, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 yu tangs on this floor alone. This one's new.
Wow.
Yeah, barely a month and a half old.
Damn.
Their business model is different. Right. He's still open. The other two closed already, you know. And they open even shorter hours. Why?
Right.
This is just food for thought. It's very easy to work out if you just bother.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be sustainable, choose the model. Do you want to just make a living, or do you want to earn a little bit more and expand the business?
Yeah,
that's right.
I think for most people our generation, they don't want to just make a living.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible to just stagnate. Because everywhere else in Singapore is rising, right?
Yeah.
And you stagnate actually, in relative terms, is you fall behind.
Correct.
That's why I feel like culturally, like it feels like it might appeal to more young people if you do it as a concept thing. Like, I want to bring to life some idea that I have about how to do fish noodles or donburi or something in a hawker way.
Yeah.
Then that one I will die for, because there's meaning in that. Yes. You know, it's not just a repetitive task.
Our generation is like that. We need more than just the product. We need a narrative behind it.
That's right.
And we are lucky to have a very long history.
Yeah.
Yeah, that people want to hear
you
what
we do.
You
have a narrative already built in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was listening to, and I keep raving about this book, Terry Crews' autobiography.
Oh.
Where he talked about his grandma who worked in, I think it was Flint, Michigan. Very hardcore factory town. And the way he described it was so dire and depressing to me. But to her, it was a good job. He said, She worked in a car factory. She put the same nut on the same boat every single day for 40 years. And she retired off it. She got a house, she got a car. That was a good life and a good job. You ask a current gen like us to do that, we'll be like, wow, what is this like menial thing, you know? Mm. So our expectations have changed so much that I feel like maybe then, like, if you want to advocate for more young people to do hawker, like, maybe that's the approach, you know, you try innovation.
Expectation didn't just change, also change because technology changed as
that's
well.
Right, that's right.
Like,
that's
all
right.
These put the...
All automated already.
All automated already.
That's right, that's true, yeah. That's true, yeah.
Then, like, I think for hawkers, like, whatever the work permit person can do,
yeah.
And you do that, then yeah. You'll get work permit salary,
yeah.
Like, it's just... It's not anyone's fault. It's not the work permit person's fault. It's not your fault. It's just what people are willing to pay for.
Yeah.
But I think it's also... There's something nice about it also, I think, that even though some of it is negative, like, a lot of locals are very passionate about hawker culture, to the point that they feel like it's worth defending, at least when they say, like, you know? So it's still something cool. Like, there's some passion that is already intrinsically in it still, I think. As an outsider from Malaysia, I see that very clearly, you know? Something wonderful about that also, amidst all this... But it's good to really, I just love having the opportunity to talk to you because you were able to peel back all this stuff about not just profit, you know, sustainability. How do you do this over a long term and make sure that the people that you hire have progression, all this stuff?
I think passion is one thing. I mean, I'm sure putting a nut on the same screw.
I can't wait.
Every day for 40 years. Maybe in the beginning you thought it was redundant and mundane, but over the years you realize what kind of contribution it is to the bigger picture.
Right.
So it's the same for us here. Every day in, day out, we do the same thing. We pour the same amount of coffee, we pour the same amount of water, pour the same amount of sugar.
Yeah.
I take the same order. Oh, kopi, kopi si, shiu tai, kuai liu, kuai liu, kuai ba, leather, liang kuai yi. It's all the same. But why am I still keeping at it?
Yes.
One, I get money. It may not be a lot to get by, but I'm alive, I pay bills. Two, I enjoy it. So the job satisfaction is actually something that you need to go and find for yourself.
Mm.
I enjoy the interaction.
I love that, yeah.
I enjoy being able to remember my customers' orders.
Right.
I enjoy knowing that once they get their cup of coffee, they go into the office, turn on the computer, wait for the computer to load, check their email, and then they can drink coffee. They feel good. They reply the email with maybe a little bit more gusto. I don't know. And it's not just the
chemical or the coffee. I feel like these rituals that we have every day, that we frame around the uncertainties, like, am I going to get an email to the angry email or this?
Yeah.
The daily cinnamon, whatever, is your thing, can be so comforting. Sorry, I said cinnamon because my wife got one yesterday.
Sure.
Random.
Sure.
But I love what you said. Actually, I don't think it's that common to hear from young people here, because you are saying that there is a sort of deep meaning in the repetitive daily thing. And it's almost like what I'm hearing is that it's like in service of greater society.
Yeah.
It's something that I was raving about to him a lot, because we just both came back from Japan. And one thing I noticed that really got me thinking was, we were on the train, right? Then every single train attendant, right, when they are exiting the carriage, they open the carriage door, they turn around, they bow.
Mm.
Even if nobody cares, nobody even cares, everybody doing their own thing, eating food or whatever, they still bow. And it hit me that it's like, you know, in the West, we get this thing where you want to be the main character, you want to be the star.
Yes.
Right? And then I've always been very like that, I want to be the hero. But actually, there's also something so... almost cosmically,
it's beautiful, yeah.
Beautiful about, I'm a small cog in this machine.
Yes.
I'm indispensable, but probably unnoticeable. But because of me, the train runs beautifully and it's clean. People can enjoy and have that certainty, and you have that too. Mm. I love hearing that put into words in something so local.
You don't do it. I think I said it before. It's really, if you get past yourself, get past trying to be the main character.
Get over
yourself. You can help someone else be the main character.
Yeah.
And it's not just one person, it's a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And if you stop thinking about yourself, you think for the community, it's actually much easier to get up for work. It's like, if I don't go, nobody will notice, right?
Or if I don't
turn up for work. But if you think about it, you don't go, your colleagues will suffer because they have to take your workload.
That's right.
Then you cannot do that. If you have morals and some discipline,
some consideration for other people.
If you are not here, somebody at the CBD go to office, open the email, they'll feel a bit miserable.
Correct.
I don't have my thing here.
Correct.
It's missing. They'll grab for it. Oh yeah, I don't have today.
Correct. You know. So, I mean, it's selfish.
That's great.
To just do it for yourself.
That's
lo.
Great.
So many people depend on us.
Yeah. And there's a great Netflix. I'm going off topic, but I think it's relevant.
Just
like,
say, just
we always
say.
Come back
it's,
to
it's called Makanai, like Secrets of the Makanai. And basically the story,
the geisha one. Yeah,
have you seen it?
Yeah.
I think that's phenomenal because basically the story, like, I won't spoil it, but the story is like two girls go off to become geishas. But one of them actually is very bad. She's a horrible geisha. But she loves to cook. But then just nice at that geisha, a spot opens up and it's a makanai role. Makanai is somebody that prepares the food for the geisha. So she becomes almost relegated to the chef of them. So it's like that she's serving her peers.
It looks.
Yeah, but she is the most amazing character.
And
she is, to me, I get like almost spiritual or religious feeling. It feels like she's God, you know, because she solves problems with food.
Yes.
Like. People feel like crap, right? But the comfort and the warmth of having her there every day preparing whatever the hell you need for that day, right? It's such a deep, like deep-rooted satisfaction thing that it resonates with what you described here. And I just, it's the first time I honestly heard it in a Singaporean context that a young person said.
I think like, if more of us embrace this, then maybe we can also start like giving blue-collar workers kind of like the
dignity
yeah,
back,
the
which
dignity
they deserve.
They deserve, yeah. Because, I mean, well, some very government, but like, I mean, we always focus on white-collar, then like, Lawrence Wong said about like some hard work sort of thing, which I hate the term, by the way. But I do think like, credit to blue-collar workers is kind of overdue in this
country.
Yes. I think Dr. Tony Tan, mm-hmm. or someone else, I think he addressed this before, I think it was for the migrant workers.
Tommy Koh, right. Is it?
It's Tommy Koh.
Tommy Koh.
I think so. Tommy Koh. Tommy Koh. Tommy Koh. Tommy Koh. Sorry.
Tommy Koh. Tommy Koh thing. Right.
Yeah.
It's due time.
And I think it's good. Mm. And in a society where we have increasing education, we should have increasing empathy.
For sure, empathy, yes.
Graciousness. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And which comes back to our first
discussion,
right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, maybe stop thinking about you. We're very reliant on
get over yourself,
getting
right.
it, like taking it from the government,
give me
getting handouts, like my title, but
maximize the grants.
Yeah.
Min-max everything, optimize everything, right?
Just
be nice first.
Don't be so dependent, lah. So other people will depend on you.
Be less competitive.
You can be competitive, but don't hurt others
like
in the beginning.
Okay. Not like, I must win you. I'm like, for example, like, my neighbor rent higher than me, so I must rent higher.
Right.
They sell higher, rent higher, yeah. The price will go up.
Jaga your own business. Yeah, it's not also like, I also don't quite like, just blind optimism and hope, you know? You must jaga the business. Like, you know your margins, right?
Oh, no.
Wait, what happened?
She said like religion.
Okay.
I did not.
Okay.
It did not.
She said relish.
So I think like what you're saying is like know your sums, understand your margin, keep your business afloat, and to do that you need to understand market forces. But to then compete, there's also unhealthy competition where you're comparing with something that maybe not even your taiji, like my noodle store strategy different from their noodle store.
Correct.
So even if they get long queue, maybe not my strategy, not my game. I can survive, I meet my goal, can already, right?
Yeah. People like to like, hey, you know your neighbor, they doing this,
then you can
do
that.
Good for them. That's the only response I can give you.
Right. Any more questions, Ruey?
No, I'm good.
Right, thank you so much, Ruey. I love this session. It was so great.
Thanks.
If you have more questions, can put down in the comments. Maybe we can do a follow-up also. If there's more.
You just come to the store.
Come to the store, talk to her.
And buy coffee and ask me.
Their service damn good.
This was not sponsored content.
Not sponsored at all. By either party. We just come in.
But this is at Amoy Street Food Centre.
You want to plug
on the second floor? I plug. What am I
plugging? My Instagram. Coffee Break at Amoy. Yeah. Facebook. Coffee Break at Amoy Street. Just come to the store, lah. You want to support, just buy. Can be buy from me, buy from someone else, doesn't matter. As long as you come and buy something from a hawker. Yeah. That's all the difference it makes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Right. So thank you everybody for watching. Just engage us in the comments. Come down to the store. Right. And let us know what you think. Bye. Thank you for watching. Bye-bye.